Good afternoon, everyone. We are starting again. Is it on? Yeah. For the people from remote, we are starting sharp. We have the last two talks for the afternoon in this room. And the first one is who's going to talk is Derek Young from the US. He's a senior software engineer from at Strava. And he's going to present a talk where he demonstrates how the heat map, Strava heat map, can be used to identify and fill in missing ways in OpenStreetMap, right? Okay, welcome, Derek. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. I'm glad to be here. I'm going to talk about generating ways with the Strava heat map. So, a little intro about me. I'm Derek. I'm a senior software engineer on the geo team at Strava. I come from San Francisco, and I also work on the Metro team. I do some data pipelining. I work on the core services team as well. I'm also a passionate runner and cyclist. So if you don't know what Strava is the record of the world's athletic activity. Athletes around the world use Strava to plan, record, share, and give kudos to their friends. We connect athletes all over the world, and people use our platform to share and motivate their friends. So for GPS-based activities, Strava users upload files representing the path they took. These uploads enable visual representations of user activity in our feed. An important aspect of this is that we get GPS traces on every activity upload. So what we can do with things like that is build things like the heat map. The Strava heat map is a critical asset to subscribers at Strava. It provides an aggregate view of worldwide publicly uploaded activities, and subscribers can use it to plan routes and understand unfamiliar new areas. So you can think of it as kind of having a collective trail or route knowledge of the entire world at your fingertips. So I said I also work on the Strava Metro team. At Strava Metro, our mission is to make human-powered transport safe, accessible, and efficient for everyone. We aggregate and de-identify Strava data to share with planners, governments, advocates to build better human-powered transit. Something we hear from our Strava Metro partners occasionally is we print out the Strava heat map, overlay it onto OpenStreetMap, and trace in where there seem to be unmapped roads. I hear this at conferences. Most recently went to a bike conference. I've heard people do this. I've also heard that some of you guys do this using your favorite OSM editor. So the natural question is, can we do this ourselves? So there is a solution to this, and I'm here to talk about that. So the solution is actually pretty simple to do it programmatically. We take the Strava heat map, subtract the base map, and get new ways out of it. Of course, it's not that easy. The heat map itself is a raster layer, whereas the base map is a set of geometries in our case here. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about how that was built. So here's kind of an overview of the algorithm, and I'll go through it in steps. It's going to be a little bit technical, but we'll look at the results a little bit more later. So we used Spark to do the data processing on our billions of activities. Spark, if you're not familiar, is a parallel compute engine that makes it much easier to process large data sets across many machines. And let's start with step one. So the nice thing about step one here is we're already doing this and this first step of the algorithm in before we started on this project. So to tell you about that, I'll tell you a little bit about routing at Strava. We route based on popularity, based on observed popularity from uploads to our platform. So what that means is we take the GPS traces that you upload after you run on your ride, and we need to align it to Waze and OSM. Alignment's performed with an algorithm called the Viterbi algorithm. And yeah, we basically normalize the heat in a region to give you the best, most popular route in a particular region, or the most popular way to get from point A to point B. So the Viterbi algorithm is an algorithm where you're given a set of possible states. It's called a hidden Markov model, which basically means that there is a set of potential states, and you have a set of observations. And given those two inputs, you have to determine what was the most likely sequence of states given the set of observations. So in this case, the possible states are ways that exist in OSM, or potentially no match on those ways in OSM. And the observations here are the GPS points. And the goal of the algorithm is to output, a sequence of ways that was most likely to have happened. Sometimes when we don't have high confidence in a match, we output that as a no match. So we save the unmatched portions next. And so we save the match portions for the routing portion, for the routing product. We save the unmatched portions, in this case, for the generated ways. So these are essentially the leftovers of the algorithm that we already have. So the red lines here represent what those are visually. So you can see the purple represents the matched parts of somebody's activity polyline, whereas the red part represents the unmatched part of a activity polyline. So next step, we group these portions geographically. It's a matter of geo-indexing the line, which allows segments to be computed together for a clustering step. And visually, that looks something like this. We use H3 cells. If you're not familiar with H3, it's basically a hexagonal index of the world. You break up the world into hexagonal tiles. And in Spark, this is a simple operation. Spark allows us to deal with a ton of data at once, and it helps us subdivide a giant problem because we have data from all of the worlds into many subproblems that each can be computed on a single CPU. So next here, we compute the pairwise similarity with dynamic time warp. So what is that? DTW is an algorithm used to match time series data that might not match perfectly in the time dimension. So a common use case of this algorithm is in like speech recognition. So if I talk slower than you do, a speech recognition program can use dynamic time warp to match the cadence of our speaking together to say that we're saying the same words. Notice here how like the points in the time series are matched based on their curvature. In the context of GPS traces, that means that, say, if a runner stops, their lat longs taken while they are stopped are all matched with a single point of somebody who runs through that stopping point. So you can imagine a runner going through somebody who's stopped. What this does is ends up taking out the time component of the GPS trace and allows us to solely compare the geometry and match purely the geometry. The other benefit here is it generates what's called a warp path, from which we can compute an average geometry between pairs of polylines. So the next step is called, we call agglomerative clustering. So now we have similarities between polylines close together geographically. We can group them by geometry to figure out which polylines are associated with a particular new section of road. The point of agglomerate clustering is to get groups of polylines that, as indicated on the right here, you see they're grouped geographically, but they're not yet grouped. In the previous step, they were grouped geographically by the H3 cell. In this step, they are actually grouped by their geometry as well. Agglomerative clustering is really a simple algorithm, basically taking sort of the max similarity iteratively until reasonable clusters are formed. The similarity metric we actually use to measure the distance between points as represented here was already computed in the previous step with dynamic time warp. And you can imagine each point here representing a polyline and in sort of the space, the abstract space where the norm is defined by the dynamic time warp similarity output. If you don't understand what that meant, that's fine. On the right, you can see the output of that algorithm. Great, so now we have clusters, and then we want to compute the average geometry. So once agglomerative clustering is done, we can take the warp path output of the dynamic time warp algorithm to compute the average geometry. So that involves taking sort of the most simple geometry in the cluster and using DTW to average out the geometries grouped in that cluster. So sometimes you have noisy GPS data, you want to take the simplest one as sort of the exemplar, and then compute the geometry from there. So the output of that kind of looks like this. The orange line represents the averaged out geometry of the heat represented underneath it. Okay, and so that was a technical dive into the algorithm. The results are here. So the first step, this is actually kind of the intermediate step. This is representative of the intermediate output where we haven't yet computed the geometries. So the leftovers of our polyline after our initial alignment. So notice how this heat map has no heat in the road where people are probably running, but this represents unmapped sections of Flagstaff, Arizona. So this is before clustering. The hot sections, represent where people are outside of OSM so far. So here we have kind of the final output. On the left, you see a map of a region in Fresno, California, that came out with some generated edges based on our methodology. In blue, you can see the existing ways, and in orange, you can see the newly generated ways. So here, actually, let's go back to this. So you see that there's the generated ways actually do represent some farm roads that were previously unmapped, basically. So in Colorado Springs, you can see some of the roads the heat map generated in Colorado Springs. If you look closely, you'll notice that the orange lines on the right are representative of where there's heat on the left, but no roads drawn. In Nairobi, there's some generated ways to include some trails in nearby forests. And so this is nice because this goes beyond satellite imagery. Satellite imagery won't pick up these edges, but Strava heat will. And so That's one reason why a lot of people like using Strava Heat to generate new ways. So this kind of reveals that. In Centre-Val de Loire, in rural France, we'll also see generated ways, a similar situation. You have a forest and there seem to be runners in there, but not yet any mapped roads. And so you might be thinking that like Strava Heat might not represent everything, right, perfectly here. It can turn up a whole bunch of different categories. You can often identify like how these should be classified based on where they show up and just looking at the satellite imagery. So, you know, first and most importantly, the unmapped infra, orange lines can show thus far unmapped edges in the OSM base map. It's probably the most useful and interesting and where I hope you'll get the most value out of it. Secondly, you have desire lines. Pedestrians and cyclists are, of course, notorious for not necessarily following the rules of the road. So that means that path well traveled can reveal some information about how people would like to use the road. Here we can see a generated way in Berlin is indicative of where it might make sense to build a crosswalk. Maybe city planners can use this as guidance on how to improve their infrastructure. We see it. We also see below a shortcut that people take to the road on their runs. There isn't yet a way there. If you look really closely, you might not be able to see it. You'll see that there is kind of a path well trodden there in the satellite imagery. And third, you'll see a social trails represented. The orange trail here on the third image is directly adjacent to a paved road that officials would probably prefer the cyclists to ride on. But Strava Heat ultimately does tell all, and it's obvious that this orange line is the preferred route. If you're on a bike that can handle dirt, for example, you'll often prefer to ride on dirt. So there's also some other things you can find in generated edges. Beaches are commonly found because people like to run on the beach. And in OpenStreetMap, we represent beaches as polygons. Occasionally, you'll find infrastructure that is drawn slightly off. And finally, here you'll see runners taking shortcuts through fields and parking lots. Runners, of course, don't need to abide by those rules, by the ways to find on the edge of the baseball fields or the very specific lines drawn for the parking lot. They'll just run through it. If it's empty, that would make sense. Okay, so the UI for this can be found on the web on an interface we call Strava Labs. Labs is for sort of our experimental work. We call it Patchwork. On this page, you can visualize the heat map, existing ways, and generated ways as well. You can toggle the features on and off. You can see some details about the counts over the last year. Most usefully, you can export the geometry into JOSM or your favorite OSM editor and make edits to get those chain sets going. So now I invite you to check it out. We have global coverage. Strava athletes are all over the world. You will need to sign in with a Strava account. We want to prevent abuse of this feature. The geometry is prepackaged and it's importable into your JOSM as an editor. And it's all available on that site. So yeah, what could be next? We could improve geometry computation for certain scenarios. We could potentially do some tag detection. And there's regional GeoJSON exports instead of single edge exports. All right, so that's it. I'll take questions. Yeah. Sorry? Yes. I think there is better mapped areas in like say San Francisco is a very well mapped area. I can't say I've explored a giant chunk of the world, but I think San Francisco, like parts of Europe, I think are pretty well mapped, and you can tell based on the sorts of things that it might be suggesting, like things that are like not as frequently populated. They won't show up actually on the heat map at all, but they'll show up in generated ways because they are above a certain threshold. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there are some questions were coming in from remote. Start from the first one is, what issue arise when users are Strava, no, when users use Strava heat map in less populated areas where activity data might be sparse or unavailable?
Yeah. So obviously this does work where mostly where people have Strava and are uploading to Strava. So I think we always would like to expand, and I think it'll be more useful as more people are on the platform. But yeah, that we make do with the data that we have, more or less.
We have another one, unless it is someone from the audience. Okay, you're welcome. I take the line first. Okay, please, go ahead. Yeah. Can you repeat the question for the
Oh,
people who are remote?
yeah. The question is, do I require a minimum number of traversals in order to consider it? Yes, and that's for privacy reasons. We don't want one person's like private area to show up on the map, basically. And especially if, yeah, it's their private property or.
So there's more questions coming in. The first, this one from before, it has also one vote. What would it take to add a login via OSM? What would it take to add a login via OpenStreetMap?
I haven't thought about that. So yeah, having a Strava account, it's free. You just sign in. We want to make sure that there's not abuse of this page. So yeah, I recommend you log in with Strava, basically.
There is one more. There maybe I have one as well, unless there's people from the audience. So that's the question. Some of the orange ways on the screenshots look too strongly simplified when compared with the heat map or the aerial imagery. Might it be that the aggressiveness of the simplification might still need some tuning?
I think that's a fair point. I think that is in what I call the next steps here, improve geometry for certain types of roads, especially if there's very there's lots of sharp turns. Sort of one of the side effects of averaging ends up being that there's a little bit more smoothness added. So we can definitely work on that one. Or
I have a question as well. My question is, I didn't see, or maybe, yeah, it's not part of the process at the moment, the uploading to OpenStreetMap. And how do you tag, how do you differentiate the tagging of the, because probably, especially in very mapped area, if you find a route, it's probably just a path where people go to run rather than a road, right? I mean, you need to differentiate the tagging, right? So how do you?
So if we go back, one of the things you'll see in this for the tagging question is you'll see on the top right there is a per activity type. I can't say that we'll be able to detect a whole lot of like all tags here, but one thing you can determine from this is whether or not it is potentially whether or not like it is open to bikes, things like that. Now I like believe in the manual review part of the OSM process, right? So we should, trust but verify, and try to, when we talk to our metro partners who were doing this like overlay of the heat map, what they would do is they'd send out a person to the ground and like check whether or not it existed and like what sort of tags should be added to it. And your other question was? It's the same question. Okay. Oh, update to OSM. Yeah. So you can download the GeoJSON, and JOSM, at least, has a, you can import the geometry and then merge layers and whatnot. Yeah. Yeah.
So my question would be, how often do you rerun this analysis? Or the other way, how long does it take between when you map a missing segment until it doesn't show up as orange here anymore?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So we've only run this once so far. And so this run is from January this year. There's like the potential to update it in the future. Yeah, for sure. And I think, and how long would it take? I think, we'd need to see. I think we have yet to, we'll see how useful it is, and then see how useful it is to update it.
If there's no other question from the audience, we can follow up with a second talk. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.